Janie, you brought spoilers home.
Spoilers maximum.
Hey, doll. Queenie Goldstein here with a reminder. From this point forward, you're gonna feel like a legilimens, because there ain't no secrets about fantastic beasts and where to find them from this point forward.
And welcome to episode 27 of Speak Beastie for January
1st, 2017. I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Lizzie. And today we want to welcome our special guest, Anne. So Anne, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm from Chicago. I work in a pension office. I'm a Slytherin / Thunderbird, which, as Yay. Far as I can tell, means that I like to travel, but my idea of roughing it is being in a hotel with slow Wi-Fi. let's see here. My Patronus is a white mare. And I started reading Harry Potter when I was 16, and one of my friends forced me to read it because I was avoiding it because it was popular. Because I was 16 and I was dumb. So she shoved Sorcerer's Stone into my hands and said, no, you have to read this, trust me.
Aw, oh, nice. Good friend.
Yeah. Yeah, very good friend.
I tried to do that with my sister. Backfired.
Oh.
The only sister. Yep. The only books my sister ever wanted to read that I recommended were Twilight and The Hunger Games.
Same, actually.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just this is back when I was younger, and I actually liked Twilight, but mm-hmm. I've tried to get my sister to read Harry Potter, and she's like, I don't need to. I've got you. And I'm like, no! No! That's not how it works.
My sister comes into my room from time to time, and she's just like, I'm in the mood to watch Twilight today. And then she'll watch it, and then she'll be like, I'm in the mood to read it today, and then she'll read it. And she'll come to me and she'll be like, why don't you like this? It's such a good book. And I'm like, it's just...
To be a teenager.
I was like, it's up all you, honey. All you. All you.
My sister, legitimately, I think I've watched Goblet of Fire more times than any other movie because my sister liked seeing...
Oh, yeah.
He played Cedric. What was his
name? Robert Pattinson.
Thank you. Yeah. Yep. So that was the one movie she did request to watch a lot before Twilight came out. But after that, after Twilight, it was like, let's watch Twilight. I'm like, but Brittany, no.
If she wants, I have like a huge poster of him, like Goblet of Fire. Like those character posters they did. It's a little banged up, but I'm sure it's in my closet somewhere.
Wow.
Also I don't know have what... a Victor Crumb one, a Ron one, a Harry one. It was really
She's almost 30 now. I don't know how she feels about having a poster on her wall. I don't know. What are you interested about, Shannon?
I'm just interested to know how she acquired all these posters.
Me? Yeah. Oh, I bought them.
Yeah. Okay.
Poster websites.
With money, Shannon.
It's called capitalism, Shannon.
What's that? I don't
She bartered for them.
That would be more interesting.
I actually have to tell Ashley and Alina, I have a huge Fantastic Beasts poster, like a movie theater size poster that someone sent me.
I don't know,
maybe we can do something with it.
Give do you know somebody. Who? Should we be
yeah,
concerned?
What? It's from a friend from college who works at a theater.
Okay, I was like, just like someone sent it and I'm okay with that. And I'm like... I'd be like happy, but also like, who has my address and why are they sending me these things? Oh, moving on. Nice
happy
to have
to
you,
have
Anne.
You,
Anne. Yeah. Thank you. I am very yes. happy to be here.
And now, time for the Phoenix Register. So we have a little bit of news. Nothing really monumental about the next movie or anything. But as for the first movie, it is actually available for pre-order on Amazon right now. The release date is April 11th, 2017, so we have a few months to wait for it. But if you order the copy That's around $100. It comes with a cool little Niffler figurine. You can find the link on MuggleNet. It's it literally just says Fantastic Beasts Blu-ray DVD available pre-order on Amazon. And it shows a picture of the little figurine. And I think it's adorable. I don't know if I'd dish out that much money for it personally.
Yeah, why is that $100? Calm down.
Well, I mean, you get the DVD and the, or maybe it's Blu-ray. It's coming in different formats and everything, but I don't even have a Blu-ray player. That's how old school I am, so that's why I'm like, I don't know, maybe. I got my Funko Pop Niffler, so I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like a very nice, well-made
Niffler. Yeah, it looks like a really nice little figurine. Yeah. And so I don't know if it's worth, you know, $70, but...
Yeah. If you have the money and want to spend it, have at it.
I'm sure someone will.
Yeah. Lizzie. With her bartering system.
Yep. I don't have $100, but I do have an extra newt and picket.
Yeah.
It's very, very true. So for our next bit of news, we actually heard from the queen herself. The houses of Tina, Queenie, and what Jacob would have been had he not been a nomad, which that sentence sounded weird as it kept coming out of my mouth because of all the the negation.
No, that was a really nice recovery.
I tried. So Tina is a Thunderbird. Queenie is a Pukwudgie. Jacob would have been Wampus, and Jo herself is also a Thunderbird, like Tina, and I think, didn't you say you're a Thunderbird?
I am a Thunderbird.
I'm a Thunderbird.
Yay!
What's weird is I was convinced I was going to be Pukwudgie, and Queenie's like my favorite character, and now I'm just like, oh, I'm just, why was I not Pukwudgie? Like, why did this not happen? And I remember someone asking... on Twitter, because this is where all the information came from. I remember someone asking on Twitter what Newt's Ilvermorny house had been, and I don't think Joe responded. And I'm just like, why? I want to know what it all means and what...
Yeah, what Hogwarts houses do we think Tina and Queenie would have been in if they went to Hogwarts?
Ah, that's tough.
I feel like they could both be Ravenclaws.
That's what I was thinking, because different...
Maybe- Gryffindors.
I feel like Queenie would be Ravenclaw for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Tina could go either way. Because I think Thunderbird's kind of Ravenclaw, Gryffindorish hybrid anyway. But I don't know. Queenie could also be Hufflepuff, I guess. And maybe that's why I relate so hard to her, because I'm stuck between Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I always feel like Tina's maybe kind of a Slytherin, because when we see her, she's maybe. Just, like, clawing like hell to get back to her old position.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. We've literally put her in every house.
We haven't put her in Hufflepuff yet.
But that's true.
That could be, like, a Gryffindor quality.
That's true.
Like Harry's stubbornness, essentially. Yeah.
Well, it's like, and it's hard to house adults because... they are more well-rounded people.
True.
Than 11-year-olds.
True. We don't know what they were like as kids.
11-year-olds are like, yeah, I'm going to take over the world. And you're like, okay, so you're a Slytherin.
I would love to know what they were like as children. Is that, like, creepy? Yeah. I feel like that's a little creepy.
No, because we got a bit of a glimpse of it in the movie, the weird memory chamber.
The death potion?
Yeah.
Good times,
yeah.
Everybody. Good times.
Yeah. we know so little about the characters right now that,
yeah,
given the information that, you know, Joe has handed to us, the houses they were at Ilvermorny, we're like, okay, that makes sense. Because we know so little about the Ilvermorny houses that it's like, yeah. She's a Thunderbird because the one reason everyone's a Thunderbird, apparently. But I don't know. I do like that she did answer the question about Jacob, because she could have just as easily been like, no, he's a nomad. I never thought about that, but she put him in Wampus, and I like thinking, like, oh gosh.
My house.
Yeah.
Oh my god. We got
the rare house, apparently.
We can hang.
Wampi.
Wampa, yeah. I wonder what house Graves was in.
Oh.
Mm.
Well, if we knew the real Graves, we'd be able to decipher that, probably.
Did you guys talk about that on last episode?
What?
The whole, like, Graves is probably dead because Grindelwald transformed himself into Graves. So he didn't do Polyjuice.
I can't remember if we talked about that.
I don't know if we talked about that specifically.
Well, we're talking about it now. No,
I mean, we've talked about he could be dead. I mean, he probably is dead because they said Colin Farrell's not going to be in any other movies. But I don't believe it. I'm in denial.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they're just lying to us. I want him back.
So in other news, the Fantastic Beasts screenplay is now available in accessible large print edition, which is going to be very helpful for those who need the accessibility of the large print and the clearer fonts of spacing of words, paragraphs, and pages. The article we have on MuggleNet actually lists a few of the conditions that it will help, the conditions of people it will help, such as dyslexia, dyspraxia, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, and so on and so forth, because it's actually quite a list. But that's, I think, you know, that's such great news. That's not something I've really heard a lot about, for, even the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book, not the screenplay. Like, I don't remember us ever talking about this in the news about, you know, an accessible version. So,
no, this good. Is wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. It says that it's the only other book that's been published like this is Cursed Child. So that's really cool. I hope they republish all the books like this.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope they realize that there's a need for this and they continue on with that. The head of the publishing house actually said because of the huge response they had for the dyslexia format they created for Cursed Child, that's why they're doing it with the screenplay. So that's good that, you know, they saw how it impacted people who wanted to read it and, you know, likely weren't able to before. So they made the accessible format and now they're continuing to do so. So, yeah, like you said, maybe that means they will continue on with the other
books.
It's
probably like a little bit easier to do with scripts. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's easier to start with a script. Yeah. Figure out how it works.
The way they said with the spacing issues and everything, because scripts are different from...
Yeah, there's a lot like more space in scripts.
Yeah, a lot more space to work with. So, yeah, that's good.
And, like, the Fantastic Beasts screenplay, there's... It's not, like, a ton of artwork in there, but there's some, like, little pieces of art and fancy stuff that you could, like, make smaller or something or not have there. And then the book isn't, like, a billion times longer because you're doing larger font.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all we have for this episode's Phoenix Register. If you want to check out more news, go to MuggleNet.com and look at the Fantastic Beasts film series tag or just the Fantastic Beasts tag. We don't have anything for Outposts this week, so we are going to move on to the main discussion.
Woo! Hell yeah! So for our main discussion this week, we're going to talk about Newt Scamander, this guy, you may have heard of him. He starred in a movie, he wrote a book or something. But we figured we'd talk about kind of everything we learned about him in the movie that we didn't know before. Not just fact things, but also just stuff about his personality. So I guess my first question was just, how was he different from what we expected? Or how is he the same? What do you guys think?
I think I was expecting much more of like a David Attenborough kind of guy. Like someone who's, or maybe more like a maybe like crocodile hunter, like someone who was like really out there and excited about bees. Not that he wasn't excited about bees, but he just did it in a really mumbly way.
Mm-hmm. He was more subdued.
Yeah.
Yes. Than you might expect.
That is a good way to put it.
And I think it comes from, we probably expected him to be almost like clumsier, but it turns out he knows what he's doing.
That's true.
And he just does it.
I think... There was the instance with the Niffler in the jewelry shop, I don't know if that was just clumsy or just reckless, where he's just, you know, going all over the place. Because I don't think it was clumsy. He just had no regard for everything around
him. Yeah.
Yeah, like, how lax are the British about the statute of secrecy? Like, I was freaking out.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, dude, calm down. Well, and that's, I think, something like, he spends the whole first part of the movie just casting magic and no badges.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll take care of that later.
And I still remember first episode saying, oh, he's not going to be a reckless person. Yeah. And I was just the most wrong.
But it's not like he's doing stupid stuff. He's just like, I need to get this beast.
Yeah.
Right now.
At any cost. Yeah, I do feel like we learned some things about our good friend Noodles.
We did it. Got it. Yeah,
I was like, when is she gonna do it?
I said the thing. I had to find a way.
Phew. Now we can finish. All right,
bullet point over. On to the next. I think we definitely called it that he would be very
beast he'd care oriented. More about.
Yeah, it's weird. That's exactly what I was trying to say, but I couldn't stick the two words together. He cared more about the animals than the people. Like, he cared about the people. He grew to care about the people. Don't get me wrong. He just had a better time relating to his mm-hmm. creatures and his mm-hmm. beasts. So we definitely called that, and we were like, oh, in the end, he's going to have friends, and it's going to be okay. I think it was Shannon who said that. It was a very, like, I don't know.
He definitely cares more about the beast than himself.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Like, because he was so reckless, he clearly wasn't thinking about what could happen to him. Everything was just what could happen to everything else around him, what could happen to the beasts.
Mm-hmm. And when Fake Graves took his suitcase, he even said, you know, just like, please don't hurt the beasts, or what, I can't remember verbatim what it was, but, you know, he's about to be hauled off to this weird, creepy chamber, and he's more concerned about all of his creatures, so.
And that was really one of his most emotional moments.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Ugh, gut-wrenching.
Well, I think some of that goes to, like, J.K. Rowling said before the movie came out that he was going to be kind of an outsider, and he doesn't really have friends, and that's, you know, why I was like, well, obviously his whole thing is he's going to make friends. But I think it was interesting that, like, he, because she always kind of writes about outsiders, but he was still different in that aspect from everyone else. Like, he wasn't Luna Lovegood.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Luna doesn't have a lot of friends, but she's kind of okay with it, and then she's able to just to like naturally make friends eventually, and that's great. Whereas Newt, I feel like he wants friends, because he like asks Jacob, like, people seem to like you and they don't like me, and but he just doesn't know how to make friends.
It's interesting that you brought it back to Luna, considering
she
would eventually be his granddaughter-in-law.
So I feel like they're both kind of weird, you know, and that's why they're outsiders. She's a little bit weirder, but...
Well, yes, but I think, in a sense, Luna kind of accepted that she didn't really have friends.
Yeah.
And couldn't really make those relationships. And, mm-hmm. you know, she's still young when we meet her. She's, what, 14? And, you know, Newt's an adult at that point. I think he's tired of the loneliness and wants, he does want that kinship. And he even, when he turns to Jacob, he's like, you know, how do I be you? Like, how do I get on your level? Like, I want to know how it's so easy. And I think that's something, and I'm not trying to generalize here. It's just something I relate to, but I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to at one point or another in their lives, is, you know, wanting to be accepted and wanting to be a part of something and wanting to be liked, and not necessarily liked for like shallow reasons or anything. Like mm-hmm. Jacob, he's just a naturally likable guy, and Newt envies that, but not in a bad way. He just sees that and he's like, you know, I wish it were that easy for me. And seeing that in the movie, I'm like, man, like that's so true. Like everyone has that moment where they're like, I just want people to like me for me.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder, like, we don't know a lot about Newt's family. Because, like, Luna's family, her dad is obviously really weird. And it sounds like her mom was kind of weird, too. And yeah. So that's, like, the environment she grew up in, and that's what she's used to. Whereas I feel like Newt's family, he was probably kind of the outsider in his family. Like, so we only get that brief mention of his brother being the war hero. But it sounds like...
Am I misremembering that his parents, didn't they raise fancy hippogriffs? Like, clearly this animal fancying thing is not unique to him.
But yeah, that's true.
We have yet to see if that will spill over into the movie canon.
That's true.
You know, with the whole expulsion thing, that changed. So who knows what else can change at this point.
The book just said his mom did. I don't think we know anything about his dad.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it sounds like his brother is, like, the cool war hero guy.
Yeah, he sounds like the golden boy.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the Charlie Weasley.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember if his brother was mentioned in the book.
In the book, the original book?
I don't think he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that kind of came as a surprise to me. Not that I just naturally assumed he was an only child. I just, you know, when it talks about his family, I thought it would have gone a little deeper into that. Like, maybe he didn't mention his brother because he didn't have a very good relationship with him. And with that kind of sense of feeling overshadowed, then, yeah, of course, he's not going to be like, yeah, look what I did, but my brother, he's better. Like, he's not going to include that in his own little book. So
also consider that his brother probably most definitely graduated from Hogwarts, considering he's this big war hero. He must have been like some big top war kind of thing. And then, you know, he ended up getting expelled. So there's probably all that too.
Yeah.
Expelled because of a Lestrange. Like,
oh my God. Lestranges.
Well, let's talk about Lita Lestrange, because we learned about her. She kind of sounds like the only friend he's ever had.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about her other than that, but...
Yeah, I definitely feel... I hope we get flashbacks of their time at Hogwarts together and how that relationship formed and what it really meant, because we don't even get what Newt says about it. We get Queenie's words on his thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit confusing because she's only relaying so much. And even then he's like, you know, please stop, like, no more. And we just get the picture and the fact that, you know, he was expelled because of something that she did, but he covered it up for, and
he took the blame.
That's what I meant, but you know, words. I can't,
it just sounds like a sad fic waiting to happen, like another sad prince's tale, like that could potentially rip me open once again. In Newt's favor, it'll rip me open. Like, just, like, this little... Oh, I'm getting upset. Oh, imagine, like, this little Newt with this little scarf and all.
Oh, no.
And he's just, like, walking around. Doesn't have a lot of friends. He loves his beasts. He likes mystical creatures is his favorite class. And then he's got this friend named Lita. And everyone's like, don't be friends with her. She's so mean. Do you not know what her family is like? And he's like, no, but she talks to me. And maybe they, like, hang out. Like, they have, like, a little meeting place because they're friends. But he knows.
You've thought about this a lot.
I'm thinking about it right now, actually.
Just writing it all down.
We don't know what house Lita was in, right?
No, we don't.
We could have been, like, assume. A Regulus.
Well, actually, no, just kidding. I don't mean a Regulus. I mean a Sirius.
Yeah.
what
that
I
would be interesting.
Yeah.
If she was a Hufflepuff with him.
Oh. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But then there wouldn't have been such a... Ooh, that's difficult. Because I feel like there's such a stigma surrounding her. Like, people are like, oh, the Lestranges. If there had been one Hufflepuff...
Yeah, because even Queenie...
Yeah.
Yeah,
because if she had, like, one redeemable quality, I think everyone would have been okay with it. And the fact that she probably fit the Lestrange stereotype to a T is what made her... such an outsider, along with Newt, and that's why they became friends, because, you know, two misfits just
and
coming
together. We don't know what year he was expelled, right?
No.
I assume it was late.
Yeah, we just have theories, Hogwarts, but though. No confirmation as of yet.
Unfortunate.
I did say, something we learned about Newt. He does seem pretty skilled at magic, despite the expulsion. So that kind of, I think, confirms a bit what you were saying, Shannon, that maybe it was a bit later on, say, when Hagrid was expelled, because Hagrid's magic seems pretty basic, and he didn't get to keep his wand. I don't know why Newt did.
I think I saw something where Joe said that would be significant, that Newt, like, we would learn why Newt kept his wand.
Do you think maybe, like, since Dumbledore was so against Newt's expulsion, Dumbledore would almost have, like, tutored Newt, like, off school premises to, like, help him continue his magic? Like, I don't even know if that's possible.
Yeah. I feel like... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I feel like that would be even a little bit extreme for Dumbledore's standards, because I know that's favored Harry. And he had his reasons, like Harry's the chosen one and everything. But for Newt,
I don't know. Yeah.
He was just kind of like another student, I assume. And maybe Dumbledore saw his potentials, like, you know, don't expel him. And he, you know, Dumbledore with his wise ass, he was probably like, you know, I know Newt didn't do this one thing. It was Leta. And he was trying to stick up for him, but... Even then, I don't think he would have gone out of his way to be like, all right, Newt, meet me in the forest and I'll teach you some spells. Like, I don't know.
I mean, he was just the Transfiguration professor at that time as well, so it's not like he would have had any particular power to take anyone under his wing either.
That's true.
Yeah. That's very true.
Although maybe it would have been easier then. Because
that's true.
Was...
The
Horace
Ministry
Slughorn?
Wouldn't have been, like, watching him yet. Was Slughorn... True.
Was he potions
I
professor
don't
during that time?
Think so. I think he was there... I guess he would have been there maybe starting in the 30s.
I'll try to look it up. I don't think we know for sure when he started, but...
Because...
Wow, if only we had this encyclopedia that J.K. Rowling promised us.
Right? He joined the faculty in 1931.
Okay.
So
I was wondering who
according
taught,
to Harry Potter Wiki.
Yeah, I was wondering who taught Newt potions, because it seemed he had a particular,
particular,
I don't know, interest or...
Colocivity.
Yeah.
whatever the word is.
With Jacob's, the little remedy he gave him, and the magic stuff that came from the Swooping Evil. So... Or was that... That was from the Swooping Evil, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the venom.
Yeah. So, I kind of wonder, because when we look at what he's good at, like, okay, he cares about animals, so care of magical creatures, obviously, which means he would have had to have been in his third year in order to take that class. Maybe he was good at potions. He helps rebuild Jacob's apartment along the same... lines that the Aurors are seen rebuilding the structures at the end of the movie. So that seems kind of advanced, because it's nothing we ever see Harry doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just have so many questions about when he was expelled, and I know we gotta wait forever.
I know.
To find
we
out.
We thought we'd learn more in this movie, and we did.
So much happened, but we learned so little.
Because it was basically that one conversation with Graves that we got in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
We're going to get so much more. Lita Lestrange existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, surprise.
Well, I think.
Who's that girl in the picture? It's Lita Lestrange. Everybody, what? What?
I think it'll be interesting because part of me is like, why does there have to be like this tragic backstory with a girl? But then I'm like, it'll be interesting to, because, you know, I bet he had a crush on her, to have like this kind of old high school romance and see him not end up with her and end up with someone that he met in his adult life.
You know what I would love?
What would you love?
What would you love?
Thanks for the interest.
You're welcome.
I would just love if they had a purely platonic relationship.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think there's too few of those stories, like, oh, he unrequited love and he sacrificed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we did that with Snape, okay? Like, let's calm down. True. Like, I just want him to have cared about her so much platonically that he would have gone to those lengths for her and not to be like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. He wants to forget about her because she was a bad friend. That's it.
Yeah.
A pretty friend, but a bad one.
Just see, like, Baby Luke being like, you're pretty, but you're mean.
Baby Noodles. So, I wonder if his mission started to change as he was writing this book, when he started discovering animals that, you know, were endangered or needed to be released back in their home countries. Because which animal was it that he got back together, like a female and a male, and they bred?
The grapworm?
Yeah, the grapworm.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the only ones.
Yo!
Left.
Yeah, points yeah. to me for nice. Knowing that.
Wow.
5 points to Gryffindor.
Thank you. I accept these points.
You gave them to yourself, so you should.
I didn't say 5 points to Gryffindor.
You said points. I don't know. It gave me the idea, so I guess, I don't know.
No, I've been thinking, I've been hearing things for the past few days, so maybe I did, but I really don't think I did this time.
No, you didn't say 5 points. You just said points to yourself.
Maybe that's
okay.
What
I said.
Okay.
When we listen to the bloopers, you'll be like, I get it now.
Yeah.
Or the episode. He may include this in the episode. I have no idea. I don't know anymore with Igor. Sometimes I'm like, this won't be in the episode, and it's
so
in there, and I'm like,
in the last episode where we say, cut that out.
Yeah. And Igor's like, no. I do what I want.
Yeah, his mission might have been more than just writing about the beasts.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit on the last episode, I think, about, like, how the publishing company is named Obscurus Books, and, like,
yes,
what if his mission also had something to do with Obscurus's Obscuri? Like, finding them or learning more about them or something.
Mm. I mean, I don't know, that just seems like a really kind of strange mission to send someone on, because as far as we know, they're extremely rare, so it's not like they'd be like, man, we've had such an upsurge in Obscuri lately that we need you to definitely look out for this skinny dude who can definitely handle himself against Obscurus.
Well, you know, and I don't know, this is just me theorizing and stuff, what if Newt was just as unpopular at the ministry, and they were just like, oh, let's just send him somewhere on some sort of, like, BS mission.
The ministry's not sending him. It's just this guy who doesn't work for the ministry.
Right,
I think in the original book, in fact, it says he's going on his travels during his holidays.
Oh,
I don't know.
That's right.
If that
he just
will...
He just worked on at the ministry on the side. I can't talk, sorry.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if people at the ministry didn't like him. We were like, yeah, take some more holidays. Yeah. Go look for your beast. And he was like, yeah, I will. And then I'll become a famous author and no one will remember who you guys are. And there'll be a movie about me.
So we talked about, you know, how he was different or the same from what we expected now that we've seen the movie and we have the screenplay. So does this change how anyone feels about Newt? Considering, you know, like what we expected versus what we got? Like, do you guys like him more because of it? Are there some things that you wish, like, he didn't do? That sounds weird, but I think you kind of get what I'm saying.
No, I feel like I like him more just because I really liked, I am going to state this badly probably, but I liked how the movie let him be in touch with his mothering side, like his nurturing side. Mm-hmm. You don't really see that in a lot of male characters. Yeah. And like when he cried and when he said, "Mommy's here," like that was, you don't really see guys doing that on screen. So I thought that was a really cool touch.
Especially the male protagonist. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, like, I'm big and tough and over-masculine. And that's something I love about, you know, J.K. Rowling's writing is everyone's very multifaceted. There's no, you can't pin one person or character down to, like, one trait. Like, oh, this is the comic relief or this is the love interest. It's like, you know, but there's so much more. It's not, like, yes, of course, he's the male hero type, but he's not the stereotype of it.
And he's not like Harry either.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
he's very
different.
Like,
they're very different, but both just as three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that's, I think, he was, not that I was thinking, like, oh, he's just going to be a caricature or something, but it was like he was more three-dimensional than I really thought he would be. And that was nice.
I think a lot of that does have to do with Eddie Redmayne's portrayal as well, because as much as we, you know, speculated about who could fit the role, we didn't know anything about Newt. We only knew basic things from the book and our own ideas we had in our heads of what he should be like.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know. And I think it was a very good casting choice because even with my parents, when they walked out of the theater, they were like, oh, I loved his performance. I loved Newt. I really enjoyed that. And I'm like, I agree with you because it wasn't just one-dimensional. He was very much a person. He wasn't just a character. I think Eddie's really good at doing that, bringing
for sure.
characters to life.
So knowing what we know about his character, do you guys like anticipate that maybe because of some of like his reckless behavior, like being more beast oriented, that this could like get him into trouble in the upcoming movies?
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, he's not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, so we've seen how fast Mafalda Hopkirk is with those improper use of magic letters. So, like, if he's doing that kind of thing in front of nomads in the middle of London, he is gonna get his ass handed to him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. He's gonna be in deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to go to Paris because we don't know yet of any, like, Paris-specific characters. So, like, in America, Tina almost immediately grabbed him and was like, stop, you're under my control now, what are you doing? Whereas, like, we don't know if that's going to happen in Paris, and he might just cause a bunch of chaos in Paris before Parisian aurors can swoop in and be like, what are you doing?
You know, I wonder if they will sneak in one of Fleur Delacour's ancestors.
Oh, maybe.
I was going to say Madame Maxime, but she is part giant, so I don't know.
I mean, Fleur's grandmother was full blood Vila, right?
Yeah.
So that would make sense. He might come across her.
I could see a Vila, like, walking past Newt, trying to get his attention, and he would be like, like, not even paying attention to it at all. Like, he'd be completely, like, resistant.
Yeah.
Like, does not affect me. No.
That would be really funny. I would see that purely for the comical effect that it could add to the movie.
I wish Jacob could be there with him. So, like, Jacob's, like, fully affected. Well, and then...
He will be, so...
And then, like, Nude's just like, does not please me. Or something. I don't know. I mean, we know he's going to be in the next movie, but I guess.
Yeah, we don't know exactly
how this is going to work.
How Jacob's.
Because we never got that in Goblet of Fire when all the men are just absolutely losing their minds over the Vila.
Oh, yeah. I would love the filmmakers to explain Vilas to everyone who didn't read the books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, we need that. We need that scene where, like, the
Are you listening, Joe?
You listening, David?
The four of them David are strolling down the street, and Queenie hears Jacob's thoughts about the Vila, and she's like...
And she's like...
Yeah. Perfect. We write great dialogue. She's just like, ah!
Yeah.
It's actually a silent
I was trying to think of something about, like, if you make her mad, she'll turn into a scary bird face, but I got nothing. Thanks for sharing, Anne.
Thanks for sharing. Ding.
So I think in conclusion, we love Newt.
Yes.
He's great.
Yes. We love Newt.
Yes. 10 out of 10. Newt would is recommend. Great. Yes. Highly More recommend Newt. Noodles.
Noodles. Okay, so today for the time turner, we're going back to shockingly the 1920s. I figured we'd talk. Yeah, I know.
Not that
I
could have
gone to like the 30s for like future movies, but I didn't.
Yeah. Well, wait.
So I figured holidays are happening right now. Today, the day the episode comes out, is New Year's Day. It's 2017.
Yay!
It's crazy.
Don't say ew just yet. We don't know.
Sorry.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Sorry.
And it's also the last day of Hanukkah, which I don't know a lot about Hanukkah, but...
Only we had Aaron on here.
I know that it's the last day.
That wasn't meant to be a joke. That was just truth. I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah.
He could tell us.
Well, first I'm going to talk about Christmas because there's not enough Christmas, right, in the world.
Right. Yes.
So true. Christmas in the 1920s was very similar to how we celebrate it today, except there were like real trees and candles instead of light bulbs. So it was more flammable. Cool. They usually didn't decorate until Christmas Eve, as opposed to now when we pretty much decorate as soon as possible.
After Thanksgiving, if you live with me.
Yeah. They didn't decorate until like the week of or until Christmas Eve, which was partly because everything was flammable, so you really didn't want it up for that long. Because some trees like were decorated with candles.
It's crazy.
And they were real trees. I mean, I know people still get real trees, but
I get a
put
real tree.
Fire to no. them.
Yeah, I've never had a real tree.
Oh.
No, I always had a fake tree. Well, then we got to use the same tree every year, so.
It's not the same.
I know. So in the 20s, Santa Claus started to resemble more of like what we think of Santa Claus. It's kind of a popular myth that the reason he wears red nowadays is because Coca-Cola had him in an ad in red. And that's true.
Really?
Coca-Cola had him. Well, that's not, it's not true.
Okay.
People think that that's why he wears red.
Got it.
But that's probably part of the reason why it's like very popular that he's just in red now is Coca-Cola showed him in an ad like that. But he was already being portrayed in red and white a lot in the early 1900s. I think Coca-Cola's first ad with him was like the late 1920s. That toy trains were like becoming more popular. I kind of delved into this internet hole of toy train history and it was very complicated, these collectible trains, because I was curious when they started to become popular and it was like early 1900s. Trains started being associated with Christmas. And that kind of went through the 50s, 60s. And then all the toy train companies, like, went bankrupt. But then they came back later. I don't know.
The vengeance.
Yeah. Toy trains, man. You can read all about that on the internet. There's a lot of information because people collect them. Stockings were not yet, like, decoration. They were actually just stockings. They were socks. And they were pretty much just filled with treats, like candy. And sometimes a toy or two, but, like, I don't know what you guys get in your stockings, but my family, we put little presents in there, basically. Not wrapped presents, but...
Yeah.
I get candy and, like necessities. Deodorant or a toothbrush or something. Just, like, little things that are useful.
Yeah, but, we give each other, like, gift cards and stuff.
Yeah, like, we always get the lottery scratch-off tickets.
Yeah.
But we do, it's, like, half candy and half necessities.
Chocolate. Yeah, ours isn't as much candy, but usually a couple pieces.
Yeah,
chocolate. That's all I want. Mine is straight chocolate. That is, it's, like, Lindt's. That it's
Ghirardelli. The stocking is made of chocolate.
Yeah, that too. all chocolate.
You just get a chocolate stocking.
That's amazing. I was thinking that. I was imagining just like a molded piece of chocolate in the stocking that was the same shape as the stocking.
To like pull the stocking.
Really hard to get out.
Yeah, so they didn't hang stockings on the fireplace necessarily. Because they, like, used the fireplace.
Yeah.
And I guess you didn't want to hang gross socks over it. But, so it was, like, I guess just in the night, Santa filled your sock and then put it on, like, a chair.
Aw.
Not as fun. But probably a little bit more cost effective.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Okay.
I'm glad I know this now. Genuinely. Yeah. No, because...
it's interesting to read about.
My boyfriend is Jewish, so... But he does Christmas. It's very weird to explain. But he doesn't necessarily, like... I don't know. He was, like, messing around with me that he never had a stocking. So I was trying to explain stockings to him. And he was like, but don't you, like... Aren't they socks? And don't you just, like, wear them on your feet? I was like, are you serious? And then he went over for Christmas the next day, and he, like, had a stocking. I was like, I just cannot stand you. So now after this, I can go and be like, yeah, guess what, jerk? They're real. Yes, you put them on your feet. In the 20s. So thank you.
Yeah, well, that's how it started.
This was great.
So moving on from Christmas. Hanukkah, It was actually very interesting in the 20s. So first of all, in 1926, when Fantastic Beasts takes place, Hanukkah was December 1st to 8th, and Fantastic Beasts actually was December 6th to 8th, so it was Hanukkah. So it's a Hanukkah movie.
Yay!
Except, like, and Tina and Queenie are Jewish, Tina and Queenie Goldstein. It would have been nice to then have, like, a menorah in their apartment or something, but I'm sure the filmmakers didn't think about that. but so Hanukkah was a smaller Jewish holiday. It was not as important as some other holidays, but it really became bigger in the 20s, especially in North America, because Christmas was a thing. And so there were some Jewish people who, like, kind of started to celebrate Christmas because, well, everybody else is celebrating Christmas, and we wanna, because there was, like, a lot of immigration at the time. It was kind of ending in the 20s, but it was like, well, we all just came here and we want to be accepted in America. And then other Jewish people were like, stop doing that. Stop celebrating Christmas. So then that's kind of when they started to give presents during Hanukkah because all the other kids are getting presents. And it just became a bigger and bigger holiday to kind of combat Christmas. And advertisers started to advertise some stuff as like, hey, this could be a really great Hanukkah gift too. So it became much bigger because Christmas was big, obviously. So that's kind of cool that it was like becoming a more important holiday in the 20s. It would be great if like their Jewishness could be mentioned in the movies. But I don't know.
We'll see.
You hear that, Joe?
It's, yeah. You listening? But it's not like Christmas was mentioned in this movie.
But Macy's like was decorated, though, for Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't outright mentioned. They weren't like, hey, look at that Christmas tree. But it was there.
Well, it's kind of interesting that, like, it was during December, but it wasn't Christmas yet. It was early December. Mm-hmm. Because you could have easily made it like, it's the day before Christmas. We have to save the city or Christmas is canceled. But she didn't. So in the last one, because it is New Year's Day, I looked up a little bit about New Year's in the 1920s. This was very hard to find information on because when you search New Year's 1920s, it's just like, here's how to throw your Great Gatsby themed New Year's party. And I'm like, no, that's not what I want. I want to know how they did it in the 20s.
People entirely miss the point of what the Great Gatsby was about. I really like seeing Great Gatsby themed weddings because I'm like, you don't get it. You don't know.
Great Gatsby themed weddings?
That's not a love story.
They drive away in a yellow car and run someone over? Like,
if you want a 20s themed wedding, fine.
Yeah.
Have at it. Don't call it Gatsby themed though, because that's like, I don't know, saying red wedding themed wedding.
Oh no.
Okay, but like, what if somebody ended up drowned in your wedding? At your wedding, just asking. Not definitely not from experience.
Wait, what?
I said, what if somebody drowned at your wedding? Like, not definitely not asking from experience. Would that make it Great Gatsby themed?
Yeah.
Oh god,
perfect.
It's horribly morbid.
In a swimming pool, you need a green light. Wow. Spoiler alert for The Great Gatsby. Yeah.
It's been so out anyway, forever.
Since the 20s.
Yeah.
So New Year's, the big thing that kind of started around this time was the ball being dropped in Times Square. I should have said this at the beginning, but I'm just focusing on like America holidays, how America celebrated all these things.
Wow, Shannon.
I know. Sorry. So America-centric. But yeah, so the first ball drop was in 1907, leading into 1908. Because the New York Times was like, let's do something to celebrate the new year. And that was the first ball, which I think was 700 pounds.
Ooh-wee.
And this was based off of real things, like called time balls. I should have written this down. But they were like real things that they use to help people on ships like sync time. I don't know. I didn't read too much about it because I was like, I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm confused.
I know. But that's what the ball drop is based on.
I like, know you're confused, Ariel.
Yeah, you're always confused. God.
Oh my gosh, why are you so big?
But then in 1920, they got a new ball that was like 400 pounds. And they've obviously gotten new ones since then. But it was interesting in the 20s because it kind of became a bigger thing because it started being broadcast over radio.
Eventually sucked
on TV.
And they're then, like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, the ball dropped. Yeah. You can't see it, but it happened.
Well, fireworks went off, you know? You could hear the fireworks, hear all the people cheering.
I guess if you were in the right time zone.
Yeah. Have fun, East Coast! So, yeah, those were the holidays. The, like, December holidays, anyway.
Yeah.
In the 1920s. No Kwanzaa yet. That started in the 60s.
Huh.
In case anyone was wondering and didn't know. And there are other December holidays, but there's so many. Because pretty much every culture ever has a holiday in the winter to celebrate we're still alive, even though it's dark and cold. So.
Yep.
Solid.
Yep, so that's it for the time turner.
Thank you, Shannon. I learned You're welcome. Things.
I'm glad.
This week on the Newt Case, we are discussing Kelpies. Fantastic Beast describes the Kelpie.
Wait.
Oh.
Have we done the Kelpies
before? I looked on the website and I didn't see anything.
Okay.
But
I don't think we have.
I could have missed it.
Let me double check my list.
Okay.
Because
is it because they says they eat people? Like, just yeah, I was like,
it's like, I feel like I remember this.
No, we haven't done it.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I had some backup research on Bavon cheese just in case, but I didn't want to.
No, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just, like, I don't know why I thought we just... Maybe we discussed Kelpies in passing or something, not officially in the Newt Case.
No, I felt the same. And then I clicked on the doc that Anne put together, and I saw from its... It said a Kelpie can be identified from its hooves, and I was like, yep, nope, that's new. That's different.
Okay. I'm so sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
There might have been another beast where we were like, that's a little similar to a Kelpie.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar. Yeah, if you guys have ever discussed, like, water horse demon things some point.
Something demon-like, yes.
Water horse demon
Something
things.
Demon-like?
I mean...
Don't think we've ever discussed that.
When Aaron was here, everything was terrifying, so...
Yeah.
He loved it all to scare me.
For me.
Yeah. That's why I was like, it eats people? I don't know. Could be any number of things. Okay. Continue.
Okay, so please. Should I start over, or...?
Whatever makes you feel comfortable.
Okay. I'll just start with my description thing. Fantastic Beast describes the Kelpie as being a Ministry of Magic classification of four X's, meaning it's dangerous, requires specialist knowledge, and a skilled wizard may handle it. This British and Irish water demon can take various shapes, though it most often appears as a horse with bulrushes for a mane. Having lured the unwary onto its back, it will dive straight to the bottom of its river or lake and devour the rider, letting the entrails float to the surface.
Sorry.
When I was looking through it, I was like, this is going to terrify Ariel. Great.
I got goosebumps.
Perfect.
The correct means to overcome a Kelpie is to get the bridle over his head with a placement charm, which renders it docile and unthreatening. The world's largest Kelpie is found in Loch Ness, Scotland. Its favorite form is that of a sea serpent. International Confederation of Wizard Observers realized they are not dealing with a true serpent when they saw it turn into an otter on the approach of a team of Muggle investigators, and then transform back into a serpent when the coast was clear.
Nessie?
So,
yeah, Nessie.
Aw, she's so cute.
I love looking back at the book now and knowing who Newt is and being like, okay, so this means that Newt had to use a placement charm to get a bridle over a Kelpie's head and figure out that that is how you overcome
it. That's the best way to do it.
So, we need this scene. We also need Newt visiting Nessie. And I want to see Nessie turning into an otter.
Yeah,
and swimming around. Oh, so cute. So, Kelpies can be identified from its hooves, which are reversed. And it can also have serpents for a mane, as well as bulrushes.
Mm.
Most accounts agree that the Kelpie lets all of its victims' entrails float to the surface, but others say it's just the liver.
Oh, well, in that case.
Well, here's what's interesting. So, it's commonly thought that demons and fairies have an aversion to iron, because it's something that's truly from the earth, and they are something that is truly not of the earth. And so that's why they wouldn't eat the liver, because it would make them sick. They're basically allergic to it, because it's got all that iron in it.
Huh.
I mean, for this totally real creature that doesn't eat livers.
We're just sitting here, like, thinking about it, just like, oh.
Interesting.
So, Kelpies are shapeshifters, but it seems that their preferred forms are of a horse, a handsome young man, or a grumpy old woman.
Well, that's a bit of a contrast.
Yeah,
it's like waking... my preferred forms too.
It's like waking up and finding out the handsome young man you've been dating is actually a grumpy old woman.
Who's actually a horse.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, one of the myths talks about this Kelpie that took on the form of a handsome young man and was wooing this young woman until her dad figured out, hey, I think he might be a Kelpie. Maybe it's the
hooves. How do you figure that out?
Apparently, even in human form, they keep their hooves. So I guess maybe he took his shoes off. He got comfortable.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then, so the father forced a bridle on him, and then it turned him back into a horse, which he then made help him around the farm.
I just had to Google what a bridle was. I'm with you now.
Okay.
That is an interesting scene. Like, daughter brings home her boyfriend, and the dad's like, I don't know about this guy. Take off your shoes. Like, oh, you're a Kelpie. And they're, like, wrestling, and he's putting a bridle on him and turns into a horse, and the girl just runs off crying. Just, no, Dad, you ruined it.
I really loved him.
Now he can help me around the farm.
What kind of creature he is.
There it is. Where's the Disney movie?
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
I'm just saying, they
would. Rude about it.
I love Disney, but that's something that they've...
So, I mean, like, is there a part where the Kelpie eats a dude and then, like, sparkles float to the surface? Because it's a Disney movie?
I don't know. I don't know how you Disney-fy that. I was sitting here thinking, nope, can't do it. Just can't.
Well, I mean, they did manage to Disney-fy mermaids who also eat people.
Mm-hmm. I sure as don't.
That's what she wants us to think.
Oh, Ariel.
Y'all are offending me. What are you going to say next? Something about Sasquatch? You going to shit on Sasquatch?
Well, actually.
No. I'm going away. Aww. Can't listen to this anymore.
But I'm still going to not two
eat some people. This is weird. Okay.
So, Kelpies in their horse form, if they appear with a bridle and you mount it, you are safe as long as you are on land. But once the Kelpie smells water, their skin will become adhesive, so you're stuck to it, and they'll run to the bottom of the water, drowning you. Oh. And to make it even more horrifying, they can also stretch their backs to accommodate multiple riders, just like Jake from Adventure Time.
Aw, but I love Jake. That's not creepy. Jake's the best.
Finally, like Mead said, they can be tamed with the use of a bridle, but you must be careful to treat the Kelpie well, or else it may lay a curse on your family. If you do have an angry Kelpie after you, it can be killed with silver bullets or hot iron spears. And if you do manage to get your hands on a Kelpie's bridle, you can use it to turn other people into horses.
What?
Yeah, no, like, apparently you have the bridle, you point at someone, and they turn into a horse.
What? Like a laser?
Into horses.
I dare.
Horse.
Have you guys ever seen the short film Eagles Are Turning People Into Horses?
No.
Well, Shannon, you should look it up because it's incredible. Like, it really is a really good short film.
Is that?
And
is
it's
it,
called
that's
Eagles
Britannic?
Are Turning People Into Horses. Yes.
Yes, my husband loves them. He's watched
yes.
that.
Yes. It's so good. Anyway.
I'm still envisioning, Daddy, I want a pony. Right.
There you go, sweetheart.
So that's it for Kelpies, unless you guys have anything fun you want to say about water horse demons.
I like them.
I just think it's interesting that you can kill a Kelpie and a werewolf with the same thing.
Yeah, I think, again, it's silver's from the earth, they're not from the earth, it messes them up.
Demons.
Also, bullets. They're really effective.
Yeah, bullets are usually very effective for getting rid of things.
And spears. What was it, the hot iron spears?
Hot iron spears.
Yeah. That sounds painful. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to kill a Kelpie. It's going to kill fish.
I also want to know, does the Kelpie's bridle, like, eventually, like, wear off? Like, how long can you pass this bridle down in family generation to generation and just continue to generate horses?
I mean, as far as controlling a Kelpie, it's got to have a cross stamped in it. So, I mean, I guess as long as you have the stamp on the bridle, it's good to control the Kelpie. But then as far as the bridle powers, I have no idea. Maybe, like, so, as long as the life of the Kelpie?
So, like, imagine how do we know Wild Wild West that, like, film.
Uh-huh.
Wild Wild West meets Wizarding World.
I'm with you.
And just, you have this bridle. And, you know, like, I mean, I really don't know where I'm going from here. Except I just keep imagining, like a cowboy with the bridle. There's no way to say this, like, but just, like, generating horses. I don't know where this is going.
Here's my question. How do we know that horses are real creatures and not just that, like, someone made this magical object and then it can turn people into this creature? And horses are all just humans who were turned into horses.
I feel really bad for horses now.
Yeah, my Patronus is a horse. I feel really uncomfortable now. Like, is my Patronus just a dude?
I didn't feel bad for horses. I'm just saying, you know what I mean. Maybe you don't, but that's okay.
So that's it for this episode. Our podcast question, which character should we discuss next episode and why? So feel free to explain how you feel about that character. But we do have a stipulation. Can't be Graves. We've discussed him at length already. And as much as I'm sure so many of you have so many other thoughts about him, we can't dedicate all episodes to Graves as much as we'd love to. So if you want to answer the podcast question and also send in your fantastic theories, comments, anything really, we'd love to hear from you. So drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. We also really want to thank Anne for joining us today.
Yes.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Thank you so much.
She's so cute. We have a new website. Listeners can now find all of our episodes at www.speakbeastie.com. The website features all of our episodes, as well as a specialized area where you can learn more about the beasts we cover on the show. A forum and shop will be coming soon as well. If you'd like to be on the show, like Anne was today, be sure to head over to www.patreon.com/speakbeastie to find out how. And then don't forget to find us on Twitter and Instagram @SpeakBeastie, Facebook @facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and also on Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Anne. Case closed.
Like, we would learn why Newt kept his wand.
And also, like, why can he work at the ministry? I don't know. Just so many things. Yeah. So many questions. But, this dog has a lot he wants to add to the conversation.
She's very talkative. Sorry, Igor.
He's like, what? No, it's a dog.